Well, it's Martin Luther King Jr. Day today, and many are celebrating with activism, reflection, and honoring community. The holiday and the man have deep roots in this area. It was then State Senator Harold Washington who pushed for the state of Illinois to dedicate a holiday. That was a big article today in the Tribune. And of course, King came to Chicago in the mid-60s to advocate for fair housing and what was called the Chicago Freedom Movement. That movement led to the Fair Housing Act of 1968, which is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. Also celebrating its 50th anniversary, the news, obviously, the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, in which Chicago burned that summer, April 4th, 1968. There are many stories about when King came to Chicago back in the mid-60s and marched in Marquette Park. Rocks were thrown. King was injured. Bernie Kleina was a young man at the time who had a camera. He took his camera down to Chicago. He was living in Elmhurst at the time. And he ended up marching alongside King and taking some iconic photography that's still used today. And out of that experience and the experience he had already had in the church in Selma, Alabama, Kleina dedicated his life to activism and fair housing and continues that pursuit from his offices in the western suburbs. Tonight we talk about King's impact on Chicago, housing, and of course, my guest, Bernie Kleina. Bernie, welcome to the big table.
Thanks a lot, Justin.
It's great to see, it's great to have you here, and it is amazing to see your photography and all of the stuff you did with King back in the mid-60s. This is the 50th anniversary of not just his assassination, but also the Fair Housing Act. What does this day mean to you? What does it mean that we're in the 50th anniversary of an act that you've dedicated your life to?
First, it's almost impossible to realize that it's been 50 years since King was assassinated. And it's... I think back then I thought we would make a lot more progress in fair housing, in human relations, in race relations than we have. And what is sad and I think sometimes scary is that this last year we seem to be going in the wrong direction. And I hope that can be changed.
You know, the Fair Housing Act, it's so interesting to think that that came out of the Chicago Freedom Movement and other movements around the country, but how much of that was part of your purview as a young man in 1965? How much were you recognizing that this issue, the issue of fair housing, would be something that you would dedicate your life to?
In 1965, I knew nothing about fair housing. And I think I was pretty naive. I was a white boy growing up in a white grammar school, a white high school, pretty much white college, university. And it was never an issue for me. And it wasn't an issue until in 1965, I was watching TV and I was watching marchers being beaten and tear gassed and trampled by horses, that I realized I couldn't just sit on the sidelines, that I had to go down to Selma, Alabama. And going down to Selma changed my whole life. And so it was pretty much of a learning experience for me from that point, and I've never looked back.
You were a man of the cloth. You were a priest at the time when you went to Selma, Alabama.
I was a priest. I was a Catholic priest, and at that time, Dr. King called clergy, Catholic, Protestant, every denomination, to come down to Selma to join in the protest, and that's what I did. And I found, a little bit to my surprise, that you know, I was sort of accustomed as a priest to be treated nicely, you know. But that wasn't the case in Selma, nor was it the case in Chicago when I was involved in demonstrations. In fact, they would single me out and other people, other religious people, because we were like the conscience of those sometimes throwing rocks and cherry bombs and bricks, and so it was a new experience for me.
I would assume that. I mean, being from Elmhurst and being a Catholic priest and obviously the respect that goes with that, and go down to Selma, Alabama, take the, I mean, heed the call from Reverend Dr. King. You would think that, yeah, you're right, that there'd be some respect, but you walked right into it. I mean, this was, you were arrested at the time. This was not, here comes the Catholic priest. Let's all show reverence, right?
You're right. There was no reverence shown. And in fact, the week before I went down to Selma, there was a minister who was bludgeoned to death by whites in Selma. And so I sort of knew what I was getting into, but I didn't really. As I say, I was naive I thought, well, I'm going to go down and change things and make things right. And as I often say, Selma did much more for me than I could ever do for Selma.
Bernie Klein is my guest, a longtime housing advocate, priest, also a photographer. We'll talk about that. Took his camera down to the Chicago Freedom Movement when Dr. King came to Chicago to advocate for fair housing here on the west side of Chicago and also march downtown. Bernie Klein was right there. We're talking with him tonight on the Martin Luther King holiday. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we will continue our conversation with Bernie Klein at the big table. Stay with us. My guest tonight at the big table, Bernie Kleina, the longtime housing advocate in the western suburbs, also a photographer, a priest, a civil rights activist who we're talking to tonight because he brought his camera down to the Chicago Freedom Movement and the marches that Dr. King had when he was in Chicago in 1965 and 1966 as we enjoy the waning hours of MLK Day 2018. Mr. Kleina, I'm fascinated in, oh, so you're in Selma. You get arrested, you come back to Chicago, and not that very long after, the story goes that Dr. King came to Chicago to march for fair housing.
Right. It was 6 months after Selma that Dr. King came to Chicago, and I like to say that Dr. King followed me to Chicago. I mean, it's not true, but I like to say it anyway. But he came to Chicago specifically to focus on open housing, which we now call fair housing, and ending segregation and slums in the city.
This was a big part of the civil rights movement that seems to be long forgotten. The idea, we all know about race relations and inequality and a lot of the civil rights protests that stayed in the history of our country, where you see the images on TV of protests and hoses and things of that nature, lunch counters. But a lot of it had to do with segregation. A lot of it had to do with changing our housing policy at the federal government level. Dr. King was very active in what now we know to be the fair housing movement.
That's right. And I'm still annoyed after all these years that fair housing is kind of a stepchild of the civil rights movement. On this day or other times when we celebrate Dr. King, they show photos of King in Alabama, in Montgomery, Selma, Atlanta, and elsewhere, but you never see Dr. King in Chicago. And I think people forget that he not only worked here, he lived here, and he was involved in a number of demonstrations, which he said were more violent than anything that he faced in the South. So I think there's maybe we in the North try to hide the qualities that aren't as great as we'd like them to be. And so we kind of keep that side of us hidden.
Bernie, you're coming back from Selma. How, you know, you tell the story, and obviously your photography tells the story, that you had your camera and you wanted to document this. This was something that was important to you, to see Dr. King, who you marched alongside with in Selma, in Chicago.
Well, one of the things that I noticed immediately was that Dr. King was blamed for everything. So when there were demonstrations and there was violence, he was responsible for it. So I thought, I need to document that and show that it wasn't King, but it was punks and others in Chicago or elsewhere. Now, the question is, why did I think I could do that? Prior to photographing Dr. King, which, by the way, they're now in the Smithsonian, my photographs, but before that, I was just photograph families, photograph vacations, and that's it. And but I like to remind people or encourage people that if you wait until you think that you're completely ready, it's too late. And so I just picked up my camera, which was fairly primitive by today's standards, and photographed Dr. King, but not just Dr. King, but other civil rights leaders, also those who opposed violently Dr. King's marches in Chicago.
When you came down, I mean, because there's a few marches. I mean, in Chicago, they'll always specifically talk about the march in Marquette Park, where he went to Marquette Park and he was hit by a rock and he was bleeding. There were a lot of marches at that time. He marched to Soldier Field at one point, City Hall at one point. There was a great tweet today about the list of demands he posted on the City Hall, you know, the doors of City Hall. There was a lot going on at that time. It wasn't just this march in Marquette Park.
That's correct. There was a lot of things going on. And there was also a lot of criticism against Dr. King because he was talking about open housing and fair housing. And you know, you can make changes at lunch counters, drinking fountains, movie theaters. You can change those overnight, but you can't change housing overnight. And that's what I think a lot of people misunderstand, that that Dr. King comes up and they're like, well, wait, nothing has changed that much. And but it's because he's not about moving people out of their homes. Right. I mean, the change comes slowly, and the change is still taking place.
Well, at the time, and it all, it's funny because last week we had Claire Hartfield in, who was an author. She wrote a book about the 1919 race riots, and a lot of that had to do about territory and geography and neighborhoods butting up against each other and segregation, self-segregation. There were no segregation laws on the books in 1919 in Chicago, but the neighborhood self-segregated. When you think of the 60s, that's around the time just after or during white flight. Redlining was a big thing here in Chicago. We've talked to other people about this on the program when we talk about history. There was a lot going on that was encouraging or cementing segregation in this city.
That's right. And Dr. King, when he came, he tried to do what he could. And for many people, it wasn't enough. But it's the kind, fair housing is the kind of thing that's going to take a long time to resolve. And it's still something that we're working on. Unfortunately, some of the issues that Dr. King faced then, we're still facing today.
Well, I'm fascinated because, you know, what did Dr. King do when he came here? Talk about his staff going out and conducting tests and talking about the real estate offices and really uncovering what was happening at the time when it came to Chicago segregation.
Well, I have an interesting quote from him regarding testing. He said, "We sent Negroes in large numbers to the real estate office in Gage Park. Every time Negroes went in, the real estate agent said, 'Oh, I'm sorry, we don't have anything listed.' Soon after that, we sent in some of our fine white staff members into those same real estate offices. And the minute the white person got in, they opened the book and said, 'Oh, yes, we have several things. Now, what is it exactly that you want?' The sad thing, was, of course, that's sad enough. But the sad thing is, we're still doing the same kind of testing today, and in many cases, finding the same results.
Bernie, as a someone who had marched alongside in Selma and come here from Elmhurst to document this, to make people see that it wasn't Dr. King that was starting the violence or that so many people had criticized him for, were you surprised at the way that Chicagoans reacted to Dr. King? Were you surprised at what was happening in places like Gage Park or Marquette Park, or even some of the vitriol that was thrown against him when he went to march to Soldier Field?
I was very surprised. there were times when I would go and photograph to document what was going on, and other times I joined the marchers. And in this one occasion, especially in Marquette Park, I was, as you mentioned, a priest, and these young guys are throwing rocks and cherry bombs and bottles at me. And they have St. Rita and St. Leo on their T-shirts. And I'm thinking, there's something wrong here. You know, we should be on the same side, and clearly we're not. Some of those marches were very violent, and that one in particular was violent. When we got back to our cars, virtually all of them were either pushed into the lagoon, windows were broken, tires slashed, and the only car that was not injured in any way was mine. And it was kind of a fluke. It just so happened that when I got there in Marquette Park, I parked between two police cars, not intentionally, but that was it. And And my car at that time looked like an unmarked police car. And so nothing happened to my car, but everything imaginable happened to everybody else's cars. And so instead of anyone getting in their cars there, we had to walk down, I think it was 71st Street, to Ashland, which at that time was the dividing line between black and white. And the people were throwing stones at us and as I say, cherry bombs until we got to that point. And then they weren't quite so brave when we walked across Ashland and into the black community.
Bernie Klein is my guest tonight, housing activist, former priest, photographer as well, who documented Dr. King coming to Chicago for the Chicago Freedom Movement. Some of those photos, as you mentioned, are in the Smithsonian. They're some of the most iconic photos we know of Dr. King. Bernie Klein is my guest tonight at the Big Table. We'll continue the conversation after we get an update on tonight's news. Stay with us. Thank you, David. It's a download here, 720 WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the Big Table, Bernie Klein, a longtime housing activist, former priest, and I guess you would say amateur photographer, but the photography that he took of Dr. King when he came to Chicago for the Chicago Freedom Movement back in 1965, 1966, is on display in museums across the country at the Smithsonian. It's part of the new Chicago History Museum exhibit that just opened on Dr. King. Bernie Klein, I mean, your work, why do you think it stands out? What do you think it is? Because he's a very well-documented figure, Dr. King. I mean, you see so many different photos. Why was it that your photos from Chicago and the Chicago Freedom Movement, why do they stand out?
Well, if you look through book after book after book, every photo of Dr. King will be in black and white.
Yeah, right.
And mine's in color.
Ah.
And it's a case of ignorance is bliss. I didn't know better at the time. And I was not even an amateur photographer at that time. I'm a professional photographer now, but that wasn't the case then. But, you know, you learn by doing, and I always have, and it's paid off.
You're absolutely right. I mean, when you think of the iconic images of King, they're always in black and white. Even the I Have a Dream speech, everything that was – so, yeah, you're right. To shoot in color, to see those shots, especially the ones that you showed me that are on your website, Bernard Kleiner Photography, BernardKleinerPhotography.com. Yeah, they're amazing. I mean, it's all in color. It's a very vibrant look to Chicago, and even though it's the same stuff that you'd see in black and white.
Some people have asked me, when did I add color to the, to the photographs? I said, no, I shot that way.
The Fair Housing Act came out in 1968. We're celebrating the 50th anniversary this year of the Fair Housing Act, which was something that was near and dear to Dr. King's heart. The Chicago Freedom Movement was 65, 66 when he came through here. We had Congressman Danny Davis on last year talking about the movement. We did the anniversaries, the 50-year anniversaries of the movement. It's now 51, 52 years. But the Housing Act, how did we get from what was happening in Chicago advocating for fair housing and open housing to a federal act?
Well, sadly, the Fair Housing Act came about very quickly as a result of the assassination of Dr. King. Had that not happened, it probably would have taken years more for the Fair Housing Act to become law. And so it's sad that that's what it took. But you had two senators, Senator Brooke and Senator Walter Mondale. They spearheaded the movement after King died and got it passed. Sadly, that's the part that King played as far as the act is concerned. Now, since 65 and 66, he was pushing for open housing and fair housing. So there was momentum going on, but it wasn't until he was killed that the act came about. And part of the reason why the act even was became law is because Senator Brooke, a Republican, talked about when he came back from World War II as a soldier, he was denied housing here in the States. And I think that resonated with Congress and the Senate, and so the act was passed. Unfortunately, though, when the act was passed in 68, it really didn't have any teeth to it. And it wasn't until much later that that the discrimination could be
Interesting, that was fought, added to it, yeah. You know. I always wonder about it. You know, as someone who marched in Selma and also here in Chicago and has dedicated your life to being an advocate for housing, Was it at the time in the late 60s, was it the same everywhere, that it was discrimination everywhere? Was it worse here in Chicago? Was it better here in Chicago? Like, tell me about what was happening here as opposed to the country when it came to the fight for open housing.
Well, Chicago at that time was the most racially segregated city in the country. So in some sense, Chicago was worse than other cities, but not that unusual when you compare them to other northern cities. Ironically, northern cities were more racially segregated than cities in the South. And yet the North really didn't want to face up to that problem.
Yeah. And forgive my ignorance, and I was thinking about this today, and I'm like, well, maybe I won't ask it because everybody in the world probably knows the answer except for me, but what does the act do? I mean, what does it do to set out, what does fair housing mean from the federal statute that is called the Fair Housing Act?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because many people think that the Fair Housing Act simply protects people of color. And the truth is that the Fair Housing Act protects everybody at some time in their life. Protects unborn babies. It protects little children. It protects old people like me, people with disabilities, families with children that are trying to rent apartments. There's still a great deal of discrimination. It's not, it might not be as blatant as it was in the 60s, but it's still there, still on the internet. You'll see apartments advertised, and they'll say something like a two-bedroom, but the limit is two people. And what that does, it imposes a great deal of more expense on the part of families looking for housing, because then maybe they have to look for that three-bedroom unit, which is pretty pretty elusive.
You do a lot of work advocating for fair housing in the western suburbs, and I wouldn't necessarily think of DuPage County as a place that would have a dire need for that. And I'm, again, that's my ignorance in the way that I would think that that's something that might be more particular to what's happening in the city and the more inner city part. But that's not true. There is still a lot of issues when it comes to fair housing happening in the suburbs of Chicago.
Right. When I, back in the 80s, middle 80s, in an article in the newspaper, or editorial, I should say, they had me as the most disliked person in DuPage County because we were litigating on behalf of families with children, on behalf of people with disabilities, on behalf of African Americans and Latino families. And one major change, I think, or a couple of major changes, is that when the act was created, it was pretty much a black and white issue, at least in our minds and in the enforcement. But all the discrimination that's still going on really affected everyone, but we didn't really see it as clearly as we see it now. So now you see discrimination against families with children, discrimination based on race and ethnicity, against people with disabilities. It's still amazing to me how many cases we have that where there's discrimination against persons with disabilities, where an apartment complex refuses to make an accommodation, what's called a reasonable accommodation, so that they can park close to their unit. And some managers say, well, you know, if we do it for one, we'll have to do it for everybody.
Yeah, right.
No, you don't. It's just for persons with disabilities. Also, we had a case in a nearby luxury high-rise, newly built, and the condo associate or the condo building included all of the required handicap spaces. But what they did then is they sold those premium spaces to people who didn't have a disability. And so as a result, our client, who is disabled, had no place to park because, as you know, the parking lots are graded, and he couldn't go up or down without considerable assistance. Hmm. And of course, they sold those spaces because they're wider spaces. People could fit two cars in the space. And
that's interesting.
And so that's just, you know, one.
Those
one
are the
example.
Things that you have to deal with in 2018, especially when you think about the fact that you're right. Back in 1968, it applied to one particular situation, one that was being advocated by Dr. King. Bernie Kleina in studio with me. You know, I got to ask you, I mean, this will be the 50th anniversary as well as the assassination of Dr. King. Chicago, after the fact, in April of 1968, rioted. A lot of places in Chicago, the south and west sides of Chicago, burned. What was your take at that point when you were watching this happen, when Dr. King was shot, and what happened in Chicago?
Well, I was shocked, first of all, that he was assassinated. And then I was shocked at the riots that were going on. But maybe not surprised in a way. I mean, I was so angry that someone could take the life of this man who, had he lived even to today, maybe life would be different in this country. And so I wasn't surprised. There was just so much anger built up in the community because of the discrimination that that was going on prior to the assassination. Yeah. So he had people already angry. And then when Kane was shot, it just all overflowed into the streets.
It's the irony, of course, and maybe irony is not the right word, but that Dr. King had been someone who was advocated for nonviolent protests and you know, peace and those kind of things. To have riots and to have the violence that happened after he died, how do you think he would have responded to that?
Well, I brought with me one of his quotes that I think is right on point. He says, "There is nothing more dangerous than to build a society who feel that they have no stake in it, who feel that they have nothing to lose. A riot is the language of the unheard. And we must honestly admit that there are several things that America has refused to hear. America has failed to hear that the promises of freedom and equality have not been met. Social justice and progress are absolute guarantors of riot prevention." And I think he said that before the riots, before those riots, and I think that's what he would say now.
Bernie, for you, spending your life being an activist, an advocate, the experience that you had with Dr. King, what's it mean to you when you look back on a day like this, on MLK Day, and get a chance to tell your story on the radio? What's it mean to you that we're at 50 years and that you've dedicated your life to this pursuit?
I thought I'd be through working by this time. But I've actually been busier in many respects trying to educate people on this issue, helping them understand the role that Dr. King played and really still plays through his statements. And this is why I do like to bring in some of the quotes, because on Dr. King's birthday, you always hear, "I have a dream." And that's, you know, a beautiful speech. But there was so much more to Dr. King than that. And that's what I'm doing now, trying to go around the country with my photographs. Hopefully they'll inspire some and help people better understand that what Dr. King said then is as relevant then as it is now.
You could see those photographs at the Chicago History Museum. There's a new exhibit on Dr. King. You could also see them in the Smithsonian. Bernie Klein is my guest. Bernard Klein at photography.com is the site. I can't thank you enough for coming in to talk about your life with Dr. King, but also talking about fair housing and reliving 50 years since the act began in 1968. I really appreciate you telling your story and being my guest tonight at the big table. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.